Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 804, Infinite Community Feedback, recorded live on November 11th, 2021. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Duststorm.
And I am Godzilla T.
And we are hostless tonight. He had some family plans that were made before the podcast tonight, so he will not be joining us for tonight. But thankfully we don't have too much to go over. We do have a new UNSC archive video. We also have a few new things from IGN to talk about. There is a Game Informer.
We won't discuss the other one.
Yeah.
Because neither one of us read the article, so.
Well, and supposedly, it is very spoiler-filled, potentially even leak-filled.
So,
NDA breaking
your own
details,
risk.
Possibly. Yeah. But I don't know if it's actually NDA breaking. That's just kind of what I've seen on Twitter. Like, there's spoilers and potential leaks in the Game Informer article. So, if you do not want
to
be spoiled...
We'll leave that one up to 343 to decide.
Yeah. We will not be discussing it. We will talk about the IGN campaign video that came out. The Project Magnus video from the UNSC archive series that 343 is doing. And I think there was one other thing on Halo Waypoint that we will cover as well. But before we jump into all of that, exciting news. We got all the teams that we needed to start kicking off our Fiesta Frenzy tournament this coming Saturday. So that's going to be fun and exciting. I did have Keys message me earlier and say his team has to drop out, so we actually only have seven teams instead of eight.
Oh, sucks.
Yeah. Helps people could commit, but we'll press on without it, I guess. But the tournament is happening this weekend. We will be starting things off on Saturday at noon Eastern time. We actually have Mudcat will be casting and commentating. He was or has been the caster for all of the Halo Bowl tournaments that we've been a part of with other Halo podcasts in the past. So he's stepping up to the plate for that, which will be really cool. Like his casting style. It's a little bit more reserved than some of the other casters, but he does a very good job with it. So you can come check it out on the Podtacular Twitch channel on Saturday. Gosh, we'll be streaming 4 days back to back. How about that? Yeah. We also have a little tool that we're using called Arbiter, made by Tepec from the Halo creation community, courtesy of Europa Halo. We are being able to use that, and it's a very, very neat tool. Can't say much about it right now. There is an NDA for it, but you'll get to see how some of the front-end stuff looks as far as the stream production goes. Very excited to see how this tool can be used and potentially use it for future tournaments that we may or may not do in the future. We'll have to see what happens there. But really excited about it. This is Podtacular's first tournament ever that we're hosting after 15, 16 years of being a podcast in the community. And we're hoping that this one goes well, without too many hitches and without too many issues, that we can potentially do another tournament sometime in the future with Halo Infinite. So we'll see how it goes.
With continued support. Oh.
Exactly. I think Pence has basically funded 60%, if not more, of this tournament through Patreon and Twitch subscriptions.
And we thank all of you that have supported us, whether it be just doing retweets, like showing up at the stream, monetarily donating to us. You are all very appreciated.
Yep. Everyone who has dropped a sub over the last year and a half with COVID going on, we kicked off our Patreon during COVID. We've had a lot of support. So, I mean, like GT said, we are very thankful for everyone who's contributed to us in some way or fashion to help us pull this off, even if at the time you didn't know that this was happening. So thank you all for your continuous generosity and we hope to just kind of continue that on the best that we can through the podcast, through the community, and potential other events like this in the future.
And I finally get to stop listening to Dust say, I want to do a tournament.
That is true. Until I want to do the next tournament. So, yeah. Anyways, aside from that, we have our regular routine of catch up to do for the week. So, GT, how was Fraggin' Friday?
Fraggin' Friday was a lot of fun. Week. Yeah. We had a lot of fun. We played the winners for the contest, the Forge contest.
Yep.
And we got to basically, because we had a lot of people that questioned why we picked the maps we picked. And so as well as showcasing them, we kind of wanted to show people why we kind of picked the maps that we picked. And everybody just seemed to have an absolute blast. So,
yep.
Even though it was kind of unbalanced with a certain player in there.
Who will not be participating this weekend, unfortunately, now. But anyways.
It was just too much for him. Anyway. But all in all, it was great fun. There are three great maps. Looking forward to seeing them in competition. And I'm really getting pumped about Infinite now.
Right? We're within the month. Within the month.
9 days till I get my console. Nine days.
Same. As long as shipping doesn't get delayed for some random reason.
Every morning I check my email to see what the progress is on it. So right now it's placed. I'm waiting for it to go to being prepared.
Shipped.
And then after that, shipped.
Well, they're already probably prepared in pre-packaged boxes. It's probably just going to ship them out once.
Well, the preparing is take it off the shelf, put the shipping label on it, and then, or well, they might have to, they might actually put it in a box.
Well, I'm assuming they're already pre-boxed.
Probably not.
You don't think so? Okay.
No, I mean like in just a regular brown, regular shipping box.
Well, that's what I mean. I thought I would think they would already be.
I wouldn't think so because different sizes of orders, but I mean, it could be. I don't know.
Yeah, okay, I guess. Not,
it's like where I work, there ain't nothing that's pre-boxed, ready to ship. It's all got to go into another box. Even the big stuff. Like, you know, the floor of a bed. Yeah. We get them in a box. And then when we ship them, we put them in an even bigger box. That way they don't get turned into pretzels on the roadway truck.
Do you custom fold your own boxes, or do you pretty much just, there's varying different sizes and you just order kind of bulk and size?
Basically what we do is we buy boxes, just flat boxes in a set number of sizes. And then whenever we have something that is, say, between box sizes, we'll custom cut the box to fit.
Okay.
So if the box is too big, we'll cut it down and, you know, make new tabs and everything. And then that way you're not paying for more shipping than absolutely required. Actually, more like we're not paying for more shipping than it's absolutely required.
Right. Makes sense.
Unlike what most people think, we don't get to keep the money we charge for shipping. It goes right to the shipper.
Well, yeah, because you're paying to ship.
Mm-hmm. And you guys don't want to know how much we lost on shipping last year. And I mean lost.
I think you need to adjust your shipping prices then.
You can only go with market will allow. And there are people that will not ship something because, or not order something because of the price of shipping.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then we have promotions like, you know, if you spend $1,000, we'll eat the shipping for you too. So right. There's a lot of that as well.
Yeah. I'm always curious how, I mean, I guess there's other ways that companies make money to offset that cost, but it's still like, how much do you lose from free shipping?
This year's been extremely hard. We've had to make some really hard choices to try to offset it because we were losing our shirts on shipping.
Gotcha. Okay.
Anyway.
Well, back on to Halo.
Well, it's related. It's shipping consoles. It's related.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. I think for, let's see, achieving Halo, we did some more Season 8 challenges. We hopped on doing some co-op campaign, doing some arena, both competitive and social. So I got through some more of the seasonal unlocks in the first week of the Halo anniversary, which is not last week. It's actually next week on Monday, Tuesday. When's the 15th? Monday, which might be our new home for podcasts for the next month. We're kind of working out those minor details. So you might get us back here in just a few days for our next episode and the actual birthday of Halo. But we did have Halo 2's birthday this past week on Tuesday. So Halo turned 2004 to now 15 years? 15 years old? No. 17.
17, yeah.
17. So Halo 2 is 17 years old.
17 years young. Almost eligible for the draft.
No, yep. Yep, exactly. It's crazy to think that there's all those numbers. It's like, okay, Halo CE can almost drink. Halo 2 can almost be drafted. Halo 3 can almost drive.
Halo 4 is almost out of diapers. Oh.
Hopefully Halo 4 is out of diapers at this point. Oh, man, that's funny. So we will be doing some more Fragment Friday tomorrow. I'm assuming we'll have the poll back up.
Yes.
Cool. We won't be shoehorning
people in. Provided one of us puts it up.
True. We will not be shoehorning back in the Fiesta Frenzy contest maps. Although if people want to play that and people choose Halo 5, then I'm assuming we'll be more than happy to do that.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I wouldn't want to give them too much practice.
So we will have that poll up on Discord tomorrow that you can check out, podtaggler.com/discord. And we'll be back to achieving Halo, probably do some more Season 8 stuff for at least a couple more weeks. And then we'll try to focus on helping people with those 360 multiplayer achievements, working in with the Halo Completionist folks over there who've been very helpful for us whenever we've gone in and asked for help and helped them as well. We still got to get you your last two achievements there, GT.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Reach.
Hey, at least it was extended for another month, so.
That is true.
But I would like to get those all done before Infinite launches. That way it's out of the way, don't have to worry about it, and concentrate on a whole new bunch of achievements.
There you go.
Not Master Chief Collection.
So we might change achieving Halo up this weekend, depending if GT's available or not. So we'll see what happens. From the Tales from the Foxhole section, we've got a few new posts over in our Discord. Tepec actually shared off a little montage that someone else from the Halo Creation community put together. Really, really well done.
Mm-hmm.
From Pichu Frenzy. It's a Halo 3 montage. Or not Halo 3 montage. It's a Halo montage. It looks like his third that he's worked on. And really, really good editing. So head on over to the Discord and give it a look. I think that was pretty much everything from the last podcast. So, yeah. That's it for our little podtacular corner. We do not have any company accommodations to go over because we don't have access to them anymore. So,
thanks, 343. Love you. Anyway.
Yeah, removing that section from the notes.
I still don't understand. Now, I can kind of understand Halo 4 stuff. Halo 3, Halo 2, CE. Why Halo 5? I mean, it's still an active game-ish. I mean, I understand that when Infinite launches, Halo 5 population is going to go in the toilet, or even further in the toilet, but still, that information, there's still people out there that are going to be playing the game. But I don't understand it.
Like, if they just completely...
I don't like the fact that every time they launch a new game, they nuke the website and take away every feature that they had. And then it takes them 3 years to get the features back that we had before.
And look then how long they just, Bungie kept on to held on to stats.
Yeah.
Right?
It can't eat up that much server space. I mean, granted, yeah, there's a lot of stats out there, but God, I can't believe that it eat up that much space to where it would be a problematic. I just, that's irritating. That's the one thing that I have. That's one of the things that has really bugged me is that they are constantly with new games, just nuking the site and starting over.
Yeah.
I mean, that actually makes, that actually bugs me more than Halo 5's campaign.
That's saying something.
For matchmaking, we have anniversary throwback in Halo 5.
All right.
And then for the Master Chief collection, we have Griff Ball. And then Griff we got Ball. Reach Team Hardcore.
All right. So
get in there and have some fun.
You have to go into the games to get that because I'll.
Yes. Think- I haven't seen any games updates. So, or
yeah.
Playlist updates. So, yeah. Before the podcast, I fired up the games, so went and looked.
Also on Ranked, because they actually are posting this in the forums. Ranked playlist changes. Halo 3 Hardcore Doubles is in for Halo 3 Team Doubles going out. They have a whole new forum system, which, despite us kind of ripping on Halo Waypoint last week, the forums actually are pretty nice.
Yeah, I haven't checked out the forums yet, so.
The updates to the forums is actually, I'll admit, it feels very clean compared to the previous forums. So
you'll have to update the forum link then.
I am actually in the process of doing that right now.
Anyway, so before we get into the meat and potatoes of tonight, I have a question for you, Dust.
Okay.
How do you feel about the Infinite Collector's Edition?
What, the fact that there's not one?
No, there is one.
No, there's not.
Yeah, there was. Walmart put one together.
No, that was a Walmart specific,
like I said,
quote unquote collector's edition. There's no official. There, so because of this whole hubbub, Sketch came out and said there is no official legendary or collector's edition for Halo Infinite. They're just plain and simple.
What do you think about what they did with it? I mean,
I thought it was kind of interesting. Do you think it
was a $170 value or?
I honestly don't remember what was always in it because it wasn't an official collector's edition, so I didn't look into it that much. Well,
you had
the
energy sword. You had a
what kind of
plasma pistol bottle opener. You got the steel book, and then you got some other random junk.
The steel book.
Yeah, what I saw was pretty much desk clutter.
It sounds like it.
Yeah, I think there was some art in there as well, but yeah, it just looked like desk clutter to me.
I'd have to go back and look at it. Was the energy sword just that like foam?
No, I think it was like a little one? Plexiglass light up one.
Okay, so that could be probably what, $40 ish.
No, yeah, I think this thing was only like 10 inches tall, or not. No, I don't even think it was that tall because it wasn't that much taller than the case in the picture.
Oh, okay. Pins is saying the Art of Infinite included.
Yeah, that might be worth it.
Which, I mean, that's a decent chunk. That's what, at least 35?
So
this doesn't sound quite 170 worthy, but...
Right after they all sold out, I figured yeah. I'd say, let's check eBay. Yeah, starting price, $300.
Scalpers, man. They suck.
And I'm pretty sure that there's going to be some of them stuck with that, because I don't think there's a lot of people that are going to jump on that for $300.
Nope.
I looked at that and I'm like, you're freaking stoned.
I just don't get it. I mean, it sucks because like for people that want it, then they're like, that's the only way that they can get it. Right.
Yeah. You know, I looked at it and I, you know, there was someone posted a picture of it earlier. Mm-hmm. Saying it was some kind of Walmart bundle. And I looked at that and I'm like, I'm not depressed that I missed it.
Yeah.
But I would sure love to have an official legendary version.
Didn't sound like there couldn't be one, unfortunately, though.
I did order the Steelbook, though, so at least I did get something.
I haven't. I need to figure out where to get that.
I just ordered it from Walmart.
I need to do that so I don't forget. All right, cool. I will leave that up here so I can get it after the podcast.
If it does, if the Steelbook book does come with a code, I will give it away to someone.
I would probably end up giving away the code too, because
I really don't need two codes of Halo Infinite.
Let's see. It's out of stock at Walmart. It is out of stock at Target. Pre-orders have sold out. Check back on release date. Let's see what Amazon says. That's not a steelbook. Amazon, your little plugin can go fuck it. the plugin's nice every once in a while, but it gets annoying for sure sometimes. And then the one at GameStop is sold out. Oh no, pre-order. I can pre-order from GameStop.
Yeah, but then you have to deal with GameStop.
I get 2.5% cash back from Rakuten.
Woo!
So, there's something.
Rakuten, by the way.
Rakuten?
Rakuten.
Okay. Thank you. Pins decided to cancel your pre-order. Is that because you have Game Pass or for another reason? Mr. Pins.
Well, wait a minute. What pre-order did you cancel?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think he got the Xbox. The
Collector's Edition or the Steelbook?
Collector's Edition. That's so funny.
Anyway.
It's like, I already got the Steelbook from Best Buy, so I canceled it from Walmart. Oh.
Okay.
Can you uncancel it and send it to me? All right. Let's go on to talk about... what do we want to cover first? Do we want to talk about Project Magnus or talk about the IGN article?
Yeah, let's go ahead and talk about Project Magnus.
Okay. So this is a continuation of the UNSC Archives video series that 343 is putting out as far as kind of a promotional campaign for Halo Infinite. The first one we got to see a UNSC soldier or Marine or something along those lines talk about his story about claiming some Covenant tech that eventually led to the development of the energy shield for Master Chief. And this one is about a scientist who came up with the grapple shot mechanism, which was called Project Magnus. And I was a little confused about building a technological gadget in a greenhouse, essentially. Like it was.
Well, I think that's a product of where she lived.
Yeah, it was just the environment was a little weird to me, but
well, no, I mean it could be just a product of what planet she was on. Able to grow stuff outside, so you have to grow it in a greenhouse. I totally get it. It doesn't seem like it would be a very clean environment to develop a piece of technology, but yeah, this is also the 25th century, so things are different there.
Right.
Maybe they have plants that don't shed.
Maybe.
And dirt
it was just one float. Of those was like, why would you be building something in a, what's the term I'm looking for? Contaminated base like that, especially for.
Maybe that's why she had to make so many trays.
Maybe because it was up to 70 something before it actually worked.
78 was the last one she mentioned.
She nearly knocked herself out.
I have to admit, I like the format of the video.
Yeah.
It really showed the trials and tribulations that she went through developing the grapple shot. And it does, I forget who I heard talking about this, but, I heard some people, commenting about the size of it. And then I got somebody mentioned, well, she's developing it for Spartans, so it has to be Spartan scaled. So exactly. On your average female arm, it's going to look huge.
Exactly. Yep.
But yes, the whole scene where it works and she gets sucked into the wall was hilarious.
Just and utter shock just and surprise.
The tears of joy that she expressed when it worked.
Mm-hmm.
The interaction with her daughter was interesting.
Yep. And I couldn't really place if like her daughter was like enlisted or something and going through kind of boot camp, or was it just her daughter was off somewhere else? Like I
think her daughter was just off somewhere else. Okay. I don't know. I mean, she seemed to be kind of living in the same kind of pod-ish environment that the doctor was. So it's hard to tell.
Okay.
It was, you know, some people have theorized, you know, some people, Pence was talking about this earlier. Some people have theorized that she was on Arcadia when it got glassed. Oh. So
interesting. Okay.
But then she shows up after the doctor hears about Arcadia getting glassed. But I almost wondered if that was a recorded message she was listening to.
But wasn't she interacting with, I mean, it seemed like the way that she was interacting was a live video call.
There was some dialogue that the daughter said that she did not interact with. And it was towards the end of the video. Like she was listening to a recording. You know, it wasn't like she was having a conversation. But that could just be the way that the video was edited as well. I don't know that it actually means anything.
Okay.
And I don't know about the same clothes things, Pins, because I wear the same shirt every Thursday. See?
He has a point. Yeah,
I only have 8 shirts, so you tend to repeat. Especially when you only got like 4 of them, 3 of them that you actually want to wear in public.
Fair enough. I forget, was it this one or the last UNSC archives, but there was like a prior reference to one of them. Was it the last one, like in Halsey's journal about the shield? I think that was it, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I couldn't remember if it was this one or the last one, but yeah, okay. Unless, do you have anything else to say about that one? That's pretty much the video.
No, that pretty much covers it.
Which makes me wonder, is this whole series about kind of like the equipment that Master Chief's using? Like, are we going to see more about like
the repulsor, it's about Master Chief and his armor. And I think it's also about the people that helped bring it to life.
So we're going to get something from, was it the Fall of Reach, where soldiers were testing out the armor and getting their limbs pulled out of their sockets because...
Would be interesting.
It would be. I mean, that would be like quintessential, the armor. So what else would we do? What would we do? Like what? Visor maybe would be another significant...
Could be. You have piece of the armor. As of today, we know you have a visor mode, whatever the hell you're going to call it. Same thing as they had
the whole visor Halo OS 5 thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for shields, armor would be one. Visor would be one. We already got
the interlace.
I don't know if the neural interlace would be specifically
under,
armor.
Not the interlace, the under armor.
The undersuit. Okay.
Yeah, the undersuit.
The tech suit.
Houses the memory for the neural lace.
That undersuit does?
Yeah, that's what I believe. It's kind of like the storage.
Because there's a little thing in the back
That's like the USB port or the flash memory card.
But you're talking about the neural interface between like the muscles and the armor.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I guess like those are kind of maybe the 4 key distinct chunks of Master Chief's armor.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see where they go. Maybe they'll do the threat sensor next. Who knows?
It's interesting kind of like how it's all evolving off of the become thing where it shows the armor being made and put together. So cool to see them taking and continuing that side of it on. And then we had the whole Banished interrupting that. So a lot of it seems really built around almost kind of an identity thing. What seems like.
Oh, I like how, you know, on Halo Waypoint, if you click an old link that no longer exists, you get a headless Spartan.
Yeah. You get a Spartan that only has the tech suit and nothing else.
It's like, really?
Yeah. Anyways, I just realized there's no way I can possibly fill out this bingo card. absolutely no way, given the items that I have.
Pins, you gave him a crappy bingo card.
You can't put ones in here that only happen like once every 2 years, like the episode number is divisible by 100. What is that? Anyways.
Like I said, I could use some help from Pins, but wink, wink. Oh,
oh, I see what you're trying to do.
No, it's, I think it's going to be a really interesting series to go through. I like how it's creating hype for the game, but it's not something that affects the game.
Yeah. Halo 3 had a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think most of the promotional campaign, I think they
took a lot of their inspiration from the marketing from Halo 3. You know, yeah, it was, I think so. It was about the universe, but it wasn't about the game.
Right. Yeah, a lot from Halo 3.
I mean, yeah, to a point, even Halo 4 was that same way.
Was it? I don't honestly remember much of Halo 4's campaign.
There were a couple of them that were kind of story-driven, but for the most part, it wasn't like Halo 5, where they were really pushing the Halo 5 story in the advertisement. I mean, you know, in Halo 4, you got the one scene with the Didact.
Which was basically story-related. Yeah,
it was story related, but it didn't really tell anything about the story other than Didact was torturing Chief.
Right.
You've got the one where he fights the Promethean Knights. Mm-hmm. Not really about the story. It's just Chief fighting an enemy.
But still about the game specifically, yeah. Though.
It is.
But I'm like, all this stuff is not a direct causality of the game or the story, I feel like. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the text side from the UNSC archives thing, I mean, that's something that's easily viewed as part of the mythos just in general. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a focus piece because that's being heavily emphasized in the game, but you could take that out of context, whereas the whole Didact and the Prometheans, that's very specific to this is what you're going to be fighting in Halo 4.
Yeah, but it doesn't reveal why.
No.
Like they did in Halo 5.
But there's a lot more of a direct connection because it was Halo 4 than there are with...
Like I said, in part.
Mm-hmm. Like Hunt the Truth and Isle of Bees, like those things were... Like you could pull those out. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. they were specifically to... those things, and then like the Iris campaign for Halo 3. Well, no, I guess that Iris campaign would have been a little more directly tied to the Halo 3 story and that stuff. So, but yeah, I Love Bees and like Hunt the Truth, those are definitely a lot more separable from the campaign than I think like Halo 4's was. Halo 2's was pretty really, closely tied.
Really focusing on the mass market stuff. Like these videos, like the TV commercials, things like that. The side stuff, you know, that is there for the Halo fans. And, you know, that stuff is purely there for the Halo fans. It's not really there to draw new people in because new people feel left out because they don't know the backstory. Yeah, I'm just basically talking about the stuff you would see on TV or on YouTube. Stuff like that.
Gotcha. I mean, in today's kind of age of a lot of news coming out online, well, maybe not.
I mean, well, the Believe campaign came out online as well. When it launched, it was massive. But I mean, it was also put on TV, and I understand that. But only portions of it were put on TV, not all of it. I mean, granted,
sure.
Like I said, the Hunt of Truth, the I Love Bees, those were very targeted things. I mean, they were targeted to people that were already invested in Halo.
That's a good point.
Where the Believe campaign, that was an attention getter. It was to get people to come to Halo 3.
I don't think we've had a lot of those for Halo Infinite, though.
No,
other than just the stuff that has been shown for,
like I said, I haven't yet to see anything in a mass market type place for Infinite. I haven't even seen a TV commercial for it. The only commercials I've seen are the ones where they've integrated it into an Xbox ad.
Right.
There's been no specific marketing put on any type, any TV that I've watched, which granted anymore isn't as near as what I used to, targeted specifically for Infinite. It's always been just this side note.
Yeah, that's true.
But of course, since the days of Halo 4 and Halo 5, marketing has changed a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, a YouTube audience is massive. YouTube's audience is massive. Twitter's audience is massive. Same with Facebook. And now you've got like TikTok coming in too.
Yeah, and a lot of the centralization is, I mean, it's still there. It's being decentralized, I think, a little bit, where you follow a lot more of the brand specifically instead of a aggregate source as much like IGN or something like that. Yeah, the advertising for Halo has been very, very tame compared to other Halo games in the past.
Yeah.
Very tame.
I mean, there's people I know that don't even watch broadcast TV. They don't have cable. They don't even watch just regular over the air stuff. It's all streaming services and YouTube.
Yeah. Hi. That's me.
I mean, I still watch broadcast TV. Well, cable. Because there are shows there that aren't available via a streaming service and or over the air broadcast. Especially with my wife, she likes to watch the local football games. And she also likes to watch NASCAR. There's no one place to go to get both of those other except than cable. Broadcast TV.
Which is funny because in a way, the whole like cable package thing is starting to kind of come back because of how much content is distributed amongst all the different streaming platforms. Yeah.
And that's what's really turned me off to the streaming platforms. It was, you know, like I had streaming from Hulu and I had streaming from Netflix. Between those two, they pretty much covered any show that I ever wanted to watch. And then you had this streaming service pop up, and then you had this one pop up, and then you had this one pop up. And then all of a sudden the shows that I wanted to watch were no longer available.
Yep.
And the crap that they were putting on it was just stuff I didn't want to watch.
And all the major networks have their own now, like Peacock, CBS All Access, ABC. Yeah, now,
you know, you thought cable bills were bad before? Subscribe to all the streaming services. You'll spend three times the amount.
Yep. It's a thought I've had about potentially looking back into cable.
We use Sling. It works fine. We have one package from Sling, and it covers everything that we need to watch. Matter of fact, there's much crap on it that we don't even watch. We probably watched a dozen channels, which when we had cable, we watched about a dozen channels.
Okay.
And even that, I mean, usually the TV's on and, you know, if there's nothing interesting on, it's usually there just for noise. The wife plays solitaire and I dig around on YouTube.
Okay.
Which YouTube's algorithm is getting worse.
You don't watch it enough for it to fine tune your likes.
YouTube, if I've watched the video, take it out of my feed or my suggested watch. I've already watched it. If I want to watch it again, I'll put it in my favorites.
There you go. Yep. Yeah, it gets a little quirky with that sometimes. Anyways, so let's move on to the IGN campaign video. Thankfully, there's not a lot of spoilerish type stuff in this one. The reviewer seemed like she had played Halo before, which is better than what we saw during the multiplayer stuff on streets.
She actually knew where to point the reticle.
Yeah, competent gameplay footage from the campaign, which is nice. There are some new video footage of more of the like the TAC map and how it's used, a lot more explanation of forward operating bases and how you get those and use those and some of the interactions between boss battles and the enemy covenant type. So if you're trying to kind of stay purely out of the weeds, then probably something you want to avoid. But if you're okay with a few little details here and there, which we're probably going to start talking about a little bit, so might want to skip throughout the rest of this podcast, probably 20 minutes out from here or something like that, then you probably want to, you're probably okay with what's in here. There's not really a lot of story spoiler-ish stuff. It's more they just kind of the meta about, around the game.
Yeah, they mostly talked about just the kind of the game mechanics and how things kind of work, almost like a guide on what you can and can't do. And but they didn't really get into the story a lot, which I appreciated. I will tell you this, that while I was watching it, I had my thumb on the pause button just in case, because I really want to experience the story from the game. And I kind of have a question about what they played, if it was a full version of the game or if it was an edited version of the game, like you just got the campaign levels and no cutscenes between things like that, because I never heard anybody talk about the cutscenes. And granted, they may have just overlooked it too. That's fine.
Or they could be NDA'd because it's mostly story.
They could be NDA'd as well. But I don't, and the reason it's got me curious is because they did make a comment that they didn't seem to feel that Halo Infinite was new player friendly, that there are a lot of references to older games, older storylines that a new player may not get. So I'm wondering if there's information that they're missing that gives them that impression. Because they, 343 is really touted that they want Halo Infinite to be friendly to new players and have stuff for veteran players. Story tidbits that can say, okay, I know what that relates to. But, stuff that doesn't just confuse the new players. So I'm really interested to see if that particular comment is actually true.
You bring up a good point. I didn't, think about it too much because it was kind of one of those things where I kind of agreed with her. Like, it's kind of nice that it's still a continuation. So there's a little bit more of a little bit more, rewarding for those that have invested in the story before. And it's like, it is a continuation. It's not like the shoehorn thing where we try to kind of develop these brand new story element arcs that we kind of got with Halo 4 and 5. It's kind of this is kind of being true to how the Halo experience has been in the past, really adding on top of that and being a benefit to those that have been in it. Maybe it's something along the lines of to really get a deep understanding of everything that's going on, you need that backstory, because there is the whole, Cortana's missing thing, so what exactly does that mean, and what happened to her type of things that might be lacking from Infinite, because it's assumed that you kind of either know, or maybe for new players, that's just something that you don't need to know to play this game. So it's kind of in this, in this weird middle ground.
Well, does that make sense? The one thing I think the game really needs to do to make it more comfortable for new players is it's not a problem to refer to stuff that happened in previous games, but you need to do it in a way that makes them curious to go find out.
Sure.
Okay. Not to confuse them, like, what's this all about? Do it in a way to make them curious enough to go find out, to go pick up a copy of Halo 5 or go pick up a copy of Master Chief Collection or pick up a book.
Yeah.
So they can experience that story for themselves. So so much of this is going to rely on that opening cutscene. The very first thing you see how are they going to address it? I mean, do they just, are, if they're going to just drop you on Zeta Halo and not do anything, then yeah, I would agree with that.
It seems like there's some intermediary between when Chief gets discovered out in outer space, which for those with the keen eye, you see Chief now with the grapple shot, where that one E3 demo from 2 years ago didn't have the grapple shot on it. So they've obviously added a few things, or they took out a few things originally from the campaign and have added a couple of new things. But it seems like the whole thing where the campaign teaser that we got this year for the Xbox press brief during the not E3, it looked like that could have been right after that first cutscene with Chief and the pilot going on to some kind of banished ship, and maybe that's where you kind of start. So there's a kind of almost like the Pillar of Autumn where you're in space. I mean, talk about a direct callback to Halo CE, but you start off in a ship in space, and then you're on Halo for the rest of the mission or for the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, well, the one thing with that is, you know, at the beginning of Halo CE, everybody was on the same footing. Nobody knew anything.
Right.
There was no books. There was no previous story to Halo CE. So it was the beginning. And CE did a good job of kind of explaining things along the way. Like, you know, why we're fighting the Covenant, why, you know, all the who's, what's, where's, and why's.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Halo 2 continued that. If you didn't play CE, there were parts of Halo 2 you were kind of, what the hell's going on here? Where did the flood come from? Anyway.
Right.
And then same with Halo 3, because it was a continuation. Halo 4's problem, now granted, it was a continuation as well. They did somewhat of a good job of making it accessible to new players until you get into the actual campaign story, where then if you haven't read the books, you can get kind of lost.
Yeah, there's some, the details that
you like don't that opening need. Cinematic with Halsey.
Yeah, you wouldn't have any notion of what that was about unless you were a Halo fan.
Right. But they did do, you know, in that cinematic, it did kind of explain what a Spartan was. Ish. Mm-hmm. I mean, not detailed, but you kind of got an idea of what a Spartan was. And then, you know, like Halo 5, it was like, hip, here you go. You're in the game with, you know, no lead up.
Yeah.
I hope that in Infinite, they have an opening cutscene. They don't have to go into detail, but they need to kind of brush over any of the history that's going to be talked about in the game, like the conflict with Cortana. Mm-hmm. They need to introduce the Spartans for new people so they get a grasp of what a Spartan is.
I feel some of that's going to be taken for granted.
True.
I don't think they can cover all of those bases.
Like I said, the main thing is they need to explain Cortana somewhere in the game.
I think that's probably going to take some liberties of, you know, who Cortana was.
Like I said, they need to explain Cortana.
Well, and I actually, now
they can do that throughout the campaign. The weapon. Like I said, it just has to be in the game. It doesn't have to be all in one scene. But
okay,
I think they can explain Cortana through the weapon. Through, you know, like, you know, in the one clip that they showed, what did Cortana do that was so bad? There's a perfect opportunity to explain to the player why you're hunting Cortana.
Yeah, either that comes from Chief or the pilot or a flashback of some kind.
Like I said, it doesn't have to be a 20-minute long cutscene, but there has to be something there to kind of introduce new players to the universe. Because regardless, there's going to be things that need to be explained. And you need to get the player off to a good start so they're not looking at something like, who the hell are the Banished? Or
go play Halo Wars 2.
what the hell is a Warthog? You know, stuff like that.
Well, that one you might be able to get a little bit away with a little bit. Because it's just a vehicle.
There needs to be some type of introduction there. because if that introduction's not there and they just drop you into the game, I can see where it can turn a lot of new players off, especially if they start hitting, you know, they start making references to previous games or previous lore that the new player is not going to know. I mean, if they can stay away from that, away from that stuff and then slowly kind of explain it through gameplay. Okay. It'll work. It's like, so far what they've shown us is that apparently you start off fighting the Banished. That's what they've shown us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they need to bring in the Cortana story somewhere. Cause I mean, it's mentioned early in the campaign, what the weapon is and what the weapon was supposed to do. So they need to continue that story somewhere in the campaign.
So this is probably a little spoilerish. So skip over this if you don't want to hear spoilers for the next 2 minutes. There's a clip from the IGN campaign thing where it looks like it's a flashback or hologram of Halsey giving Chief Cortana for the first time. So maybe that's the start of these kinds of flashback moments where it's going to explain who Cortana is without really diving into it. So you might be spot on where there's going to be connections made there for at least the Cortana piece of this story.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, you know, that kind of stuff, it just needs to be explained somewhere in the game. There's plenty of opportunities for them to stick stuff in there for the extended lore stuff or, you know, the veteran Halo players that it doesn't have to affect the new player. But the one thing it does need to do is strike a curiosity in that new player to maybe want to go find out what this means. But it can't deter the player from playing the game. So, like I said, I'm hoping that when I play through the game, what IGN said is not true. But until we get our hands on the game, we don't know for sure because this is their opinion, not ours.
Right. And it's the opinion of one person out of a multitude of Halo fans out there. Thanks for the raid, Hayden. You caught us in a very deep, thought-provoking moment of the podcast, so thank you for the raid.
Can't you see all the smoke?
Everyone who has the podcast is hosted or raided can fill in your bingo card.
Oh, we already did that. We had two raids at the beginning.
Yeah, it didn't show up in the chat box, though. Not on my part of it.
Yeah, it did. So. Well, it showed up for me.
No, it didn't show up for me. So
Penn's raided, and who was the other one?
Oh, okay. Well, it's there now for anyone who was missing that square from before. Anyways, going on to
Frizzled.
That's rated. What else was in that video? It was interesting to hear that a lot of the discovery parts for like the Fort Operating Bases, some of the other stuff on the attack map. Didn't she say that it kind of led to some kind of fruitless endeavors? Like they weren't very, I guess, like meaningful or rewarding. Like they're just kind of extra things to do as far as like collecting.
Well,
or
I think I know what part you're talking about where she talked about wandering around Halo.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, she said she would wander around Halos where she wouldn't find objectives, but there was no lack of things to do.
Right. It just wasn't,
you know, there wasn't a lack of fun. There were still, you know, enemies to kill, things to do. So
It's not like truly open world where it's like there's objectives everywhere in the world. It's
right.
Just, okay, you can explore here and maybe it's something that you'll come up later.
Mm-hmm.
I know I keep bringing this up, but it's going to be very interesting to see how speedrunning is affected by forward operating bases, equipment upgrades. Like, it's going to take a while for Halo Infinite, I think, to be like fully optimized as far as speedruns, because there's going to be so many different strats to try.
True.
So many different combinations of the abilities nice thing, and...
The nice thing that I got out of it is they did say it, you know, it could be more difficult, but it's not required to do the side missions. It's not required to take the forward operating bases. It's not required to do the assassination missions, it's you can just play the game.
Right.
Now, later on in the game, it may make it more difficult because you won't have access to a piece of equipment that may help you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, that's nice. Yep.
It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be interesting to balance that. I want to discover all the unlocks, but I also want to progress through the campaign, so I'm not like left in the dark. I think,
you know, for me, it's probably going to be, if it's on the way to the next objective, I'll probably do it.
Yeah.
But if I have to go out of my way to do it, I probably won't.
And then, like, depending on what kind of, like, the continuation of the campaign is, like, after you, quote-unquote, finish the campaign, like, you, like take Borderlands, for example. Whenever you beat the end boss, you can still go and walk around the world before you actually, like, do your next generation for your character.
Mm-hmm.
So, will it be like that, where it's like, once you kind of defeat the game, you can go around and get the rest of the forward operating bases and the lore type stuff, and kind of leave the game in that state for whenever more content comes out for campaign? Or is it a, once you're done with this, like, you restart?
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if your progress carries over between difficulties.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you go through and you play it through normal and you unlock everything, well, does that carry over to heroic, or do you have to do it all again?
Kind of like the whole thing with the ODST audio logs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do those stay unlocked, or do those get reset on the... Yeah, I don't know how they're going to handle that, really.
I mean, the lore collectibles, I'm sure there's going to be some that's not available on normal or heroic difficulty. It's only going to be available on legendary. Same with skulls.
They always have those, yeah.
Yeah, they always have those. So those will probably be permanent unlocks. What I'm curious about is, if you clear a base and then you come back and you play on a higher difficulty, do you have to clear the base again to get access to the upgrades that are available from that base? Or, you know, your Spartan cores. Do you have to go find all the Spartan cores again to get the upgrades?
Or do you have multiple saves of campaigns where it's like, okay, this save is my normal run that has, like, I go for all the lore stuff, and this one save is just my straight legendary run to complete. Like, there might be a campaign save system, like how old Nintendo games had three save slots. It might be three. Oh, yeah, it did. I totally forgot about that. It did.
But wow. I think you could only have, like, three saves.
Kind of like traditional Nintendo games where you had three save slots. I've totally forgot about that for Halo 5. Tells you how much I've played the campaign. Wow. Okay. So there is precedence for it in Halo so far.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's how they'll do it.
Like I said, I'd like to know. It's like, you know, when I most likely I'll start the game on normal. Because I kind of like to just enjoy the story before I get grunts handing me ammo.
I like heroic for that. It's, for me, heroic is the right balance of difficulty and a fun experience to go through the story.
Yeah.
Then that's just for me personally.
You know, generally I'll go through, I'll go through heroic. I kind of use normal as kind of a learning experience, learn the game, get an idea what the spawns are, things like that. Heroic, definitely it's more realistic. But I'm almost wondering, and 343 hasn't done this yet, if they're going to have different dialogue for cutscenes.
Well, it's an engine. I hope so.
Like I said,
they're in engine cutscenes.
Hope that comes back. Because that's one of the things I always loved about the Bungie Halo games, is when you completed a mission on a specific difficulty, you got a different set of dialogue.
Halo 4 did that a little bit.
A little bit, not like Halo 3 did.
No, it didn't.
Or Halo 2.
It still did a little bit. Did Halo 5 do that?
Nothing that I noticed.
Yeah. I hope so. Yeah, because all the Johnson parts, like Johnson exclusive parts had.
I know what the ladies like.
And over there, I left you a present and I'm walking away.
I love that line.
It's a good line.
Speaking of lines, they did mention that the Marines and the Grunts have a pretty good variety of lines.
Yeah.
And some of them are pretty good.
At least
the ones they showed.
Right. What else wasn't good in there to kind of bring up? I don't think there was much else. I think those were the pretty notable things from the IGN video that I could think of.
Well, they did talk about how, you know, how you, the stagger system for enemies, things like that. Again, it's stuff that they've already showed off.
Yeah.
But yeah. And the campaign footage they showed, it looked great.
It really did. I'm excited to start playing this whenever I get back from London.
Yeah. Sucks to be you.
I'm hoping for a media copy, 343, maybe, please.
Me?
One for GT.
Me?
Please.
We love you, 343. I'm sorry I said what I said earlier about your website, but it sucks. Oh,
hey, honesty is best in my opinion, at least. The forums are pretty nice, though.
Yeah, if you give me a copy, I will gladly give away two copies of the game that there I paid for. And you don't even have to pay me back for them.
Okay. there is a new designing the Halo esports ecosystem from Tashi. And this one, it's kind of funny. This one is how to be a good pro and a good fan with regards to HCS. And it basically boils down to...
Don't be a dick.
Supporting I mean, that is one of the corners of the whole pros thing. It's like not going to social media and being toxic, not being degrading, interacting with like viewers and being positive. Like that's a pretty big cornerstone of the whole player and pros.
That pretty much applies to just about any community.
Yeah. But still, it. That's up on Halo Waypoint if you want to go check that out. And there is also a Tech Preview 2 outcomes, and this goes over a lot of the feedback that they got from the big team battle and arena PvP tech preview that happened, a month ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to.
Yeah, they were right on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, when you invite hundreds of thousands of people, there's a lot of feedback to go through.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of feedback to go through.
Yeah. So we'll just hit the bulleted points. There's narrative for all of these points within the Waypoint article if you want to go look through them, but we'll just hit the bullet points. On accessibility, some positives that were received back. The friend or foe IFF outline color options. Another positive, the full controller and keyboard mouse remapping continues to receive praise. Ability to change text size across the entire game and subtitles for multiplayer. All positive feedback. The feedback part, so that it's interesting that they say positive than feedback, but the more negative feedback side of things. Desire for an auto sprint option. Desire for more color controls for color blind mode. And desire to customize placement and size of HUD elements, which we've talked about a lot on the past few podcasts. On the audio front, the positives were weapons sounded powerful and added to the experience. Needler projectiles sound more glassy and crystal since the last flight. Ambient map sounds and details, especially on fragmentation, were appreciated. People continue to enjoy both menu and multiplayer music, and the music riffs in-game are a nice touch. I don't care too much for the music riffs mid-game, but...
Yeah, I tend to turn off the in-game music.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I'm in a multiplayer match, I want to hear footsteps. I don't want to hear a drum beat.
I don't know. Can you turn that off? I guess you can. Well,
you can turn the volume down.
You turn off that specific music, or is it just music across the entire game that you turn off?
I don't. Well, no, they actually have a separate slider for in-game and menu music.
Oh, okay. Cool. Feedback, Neeler Super Combine Explosion sounds good, but can be too quiet.
I think not flashy enough either.
It's really not. The Neeler, like, it's powerful, but the effects are underwhelming.
Mm-hmm. The way the weapon feels doesn't match what you see or hear.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, it sounds better.
Tweaks are coming.
It still can have some, there's still some work to be done to it.
Yeah, tweaks to come. From the live experience perspective, positive feedback was customization is looking great. The negative feedback, many players want to earn per match XP outside of challenges. Talked about that before. Concerns around timed double XP boost efficiency. Briefly talked about that. And then desire for a career ranking system in addition to the battle pass.
Now, I will state that they did go through this and they did say that they are they will post-launch be working on a different progression system.
Yep.
But it's going to take some time because they have to fully flush out a new progression system. They did say that they are going to work on the XP boosts only being active while in game. So that
but
if
not,
you're
not launch, but something to work on,
right? It's something they're going to work on. So whether it be, you know, instead of a time limit per game or the game, the time clock will stop at, you know, start at the beginning of a match and end at the end of a match.
I don't know why they just make it X number of games.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
like take an average of how long a game is and see how that fits into the thing.
I mean, 30 minutes, okay, you know, it's a 30 minute XP boost, which is about three games, depending on, you know, how fast you go through the games. I mean, some are faster than others, but on average, about three games.
Yeah. Yep. On the multiplayer side of things, going into training mode, we've got the positives. Training mode provides a safe place to simply lean back and learn as a beginner. Training mode received lots of love from competitive players looking to deliberately practice. That's good that the competitive players are liking it. That's a really good sign, actually. The wide array of options to change the combat situations were also appreciated, especially like live time as well. In the middle of a match, that was nice. Not having to like back out and reset those. So that was good.
Not have to end it, go back, change it, then restart it. Yeah.
That's a very, very good key positive point, I think, for that. Bots continue to be intelligent, fun, and challenging.
Almost.
Almost. Yeah, almost. I would agree with that. Almost. It's getting there, but
it is getting it has better. A good start. They are a lot better than they were in the first flight, but
yeah,
they still could use some work.
Yeah, they could. They could.
Which I'm sure will be something they'll work on continuously.
Yes. Yeah. Feedback for the training mode, players wanted to play on fragmentation and to have their friends join them. I did have that thought where you could basically have a custom game version of a bot match.
Well, see, that's just it. In custom games, you can have bots.
Yeah, it's probably doable. It probably just was not.
Well, I'm thinking they're wanting the training mode to be...
They probably want actual training mode as like a custom game thing and not just custom game with bots. But that's a little bit different.
That's what they want. But I think 343 is looking at training mode as something that you go in solo.
Yeah, but I kind of get.
I'm just saying that as far as I'm not saying that the people that want to bring their friends into training mode are wrong or it's a bad idea. I'm just saying that I think 343 is kind of trying to push the training mode to be your training, not your team's training.
I get that.
You know, if you know, granted, in custom games, the people that have played it said, yes, you can go up against bots. There are fewer options to change than there are in training mode. But also, if you're wanting to do, I mean, honestly, if you're wanting to do a team training mode, you should be playing on the multiplayer maps as they appear in multiplayer.
Yep.
Not custom settings.
Yeah.
I mean, training mode's
to get
you used to playing with the guns, to help with your movement, things like that. where, you know, when you bring friends in, now you're starting to work on like your team mechanics, which seems to be more fitting to play on actual multiplayer map setups.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Where it's like a, no, okay, you've convinced me.
If they allow friends into training mode, I don't have a problem with it. That's just kind of the vibe I've gotten from training mode.
I wonder if it was mostly asked because that we didn't have custom games as an option. Custom games as an option, that may have tipped it differently to where they would have, that would have been an option for them,
mm-hmm,
instead of having the training mode mentality specifically to, so
yeah,
that may be where the difference is between the two, honestly.
Well, I mean, some people found a way to enable custom games.
Yeah.
I never tried it.
Around. I didn't either. I tried looking for some instructions on how people did it, but it was a very roundabout way of doing it. It just wasn't worth it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was more interested in testing the build for the build.
Don't
get me wrong, the weapons they left out, you know, I would love to play with them. The custom games, yeah, it would have been great to play some custom games, but I was really focused on, you know, really what they presented to us, and I wanted to evaluate what they presented to us, because anything outside of that may or may not be the final version, which,
yeah,
from this list of stuff they just gave us, even what we tested is not the final version.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got some tweaks that they plan on making before game launch.
And even tweaks that they were planning on making or had even implemented,
uh-huh,
before this build got forked off.
Exactly.
Of the main build.
It's like they've already fixed that you can't push a flag with a vehicle. They've, yep, already fixed the double melee, which, thank, yep, God.
Well,
I'm sorry, when you can melee through an overshield that fast, that's broken.
I mean, it wasn't just double melee.
It's fun to do. It's fun to do, but yeah, no, that's broken.
Yeah, that's definitely broken. And you, Lewis, I like the funny. All your surfers are belong to 343. That was clever. Combat sensor. We've got the positive being most players appreciate the return of the motion tracker settings. Okay. Feedback: consistent reports that the range felt too small, especially in big team battle.
And I would agree with that.
Yep. And the height indication was present, but many players did not recognize this implementation.
I didn't. I totally missed it.
I didn't either. I didn't know there was one, actually.
Yeah,
now that I think about it.
I didn't know there was one until I read that. I'm like, huh?
Did anyone else notice that? Because I don't remember seeing that. Huh. Anyways. Arena for maps and modes. Positives: Behemoth is amazing all around. Some considered it an instant classic. Capture the Flag is a classic, but... yes, do you have some words for that? Okay. Capture the Flag is a classic beloved mode. Many appreciate the return of strongholds, notably PC players who have not experienced it in Halo 5 found it very enjoyable. I mean, it was in custom games, but okay. Split feedback. Some players expressed a desire for the flag to kill in one melee. Others appreciated the current tuning. I guess it's multiple hits to kill.
Yeah, it's two hits to kill. Which, you know, I do agree with not the two hits. Single hit to kill, because the flag carrier is no longer armed.
Right.
You don't have the flagnum. So, if someone's stupid enough to get that close to the flag carrier, then they should die in one hit.
You know what'd be interesting is if you meleeed with the flag, it's the quick punch. But if you pull the trigger and attack with the flag, it's the swing. So have the swing be an instant kill and have the punch just be a regular melee. That would be an interesting.
I would say just, you know, run the flag through the chest.
Maybe have different animations.
Boom. Anyway,
it's the what's the new spike gun called?
Mangler?
No, the big hard thing. Oh, to
the
shoot.
Skewer.
Yeah. It's like your own portable, just fist skewer, kunk, right through the chest. Do you have some like different animations?
I liked the one in Halo 4. The assassination with the flag in Halo 4. That was good.
Oh, yeah. Some of the different ones in there. Yeah, those are nice. Some notes from Arena. Some players appreciated the flag visibility rules. Others were still unsure how they worked.
Okay. I can't say that I completely figured it out, but I can't. I also can't say that I was really paying attention to it either. I mean, gotcha. The two things that I knew was I knew when our team had the flag and where it was, and then I knew where to take the flag when I picked it up. Which
they got the basics.
Yeah, those were important things. And then when the enemy team dropped the flag, I was able to tell where the flag was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know there's a lot more to that than that, but those three things are the things that I really look for with flag.
And they were all pretty much there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the follow, Dreadlock Samurai 27. Appreciate it. See you engaging with the chat. Hopefully they're nice to you.
I promise they don't bite much.
Much. Maybe a few nibbles. The last note for Arena, the bug that allowed vehicles to push flags was disliked by most.
Yeah.
They said that it is being fixed. For a big team battle, the positives, lots of positives. Fragmentation is an amazing map with plenty of spaces for vehicle and Spartan combat. Vaults/loot caves are a fun, unique addition. Pelican vehicles deliveries looked amazing and added to the experience. Wildlife was a pleasant surprise for all. Capture the flag is a classic, and rotating the flag's position was enjoyed by most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the concept of having the flags move. I think Haas wasn't a huge fan of it, but I kind of like the concept. Where it kind of starts out in a more open, easy to get to act part, and then it gets progressively harder.
With that mechanic. I think it's a good mechanic.
I think so too. I thought it played very well.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Total Control received top marks for being both fun and intense. Moving the zones after each score helped keep the gameplay fresh throughout each match.
Yes.
Although when they spawn to one team's side over another, it does kind of get a little frustrating, but.
Well, true, but you get
limited space.
You get two neutral spawns and you get two opposing, you know, favored spawns. So,
not for all of them. Not for all of them.
There were a few where
it was because whenever they were on the extreme sides, like it was clearly favored to one team side over another.
But not all three of them were favored. Not all three of them would be favored to one side.
No, but you would have two favored to one side and then one neutral. I'm thinking of one, like whenever the one that's in front of the loot cave and then the two that go back. The two that go back are favored, but the one that's the loot cave is neutral. So like there's never time where it's all three on one side, which is good, but there are a few setups where it is favored to one team over another.
Yeah.
And that's just what was the kind of the part. But they don't have a lot of you only have so much room to put spawn or put capture places in anyways.
Mm-hmm. I thought it added some intensity to the gameplay.
Oh, it certainly did.
I thought it made it more fun.
It's just kind of one of those frustrating things where it's like, okay, if you're down and the other team is 1 or 2 points ahead of you and it's just 1 point or 2 points left to go, having that spawn that favors them is like, okay, now you're kind of giving them the free win.
Yeah, but I never really,
in a way,
I never really, you know, the games I played, I never really got that. You know, whenever, you know, like the other team was,
fair enough,
the other team was ahead, it always seemed like it favored the other team. You know, if red was ahead 2 and then blue was at 0 or 1, it seemed like it favored the blue team side.
It was always a constant rotation.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I just got the perfect mix of games. But yeah, I never felt like, other than player skill, that the map decided the winner.
Gotcha. Okay.
The actual spawns decided who won.
I had a couple of games where it felt like a couple of the control zones did dictate the winner. But
yeah, like I said,
just different difference of experience. That's all. We'll see what it is fully like in the game when it's released. Maybe they have some data that might influence how they set up some of the control zones. We'll have to wait and see. Feedback for Big Team Battle: spawning more powerful vehicles later in the match meant more players had fewer opportunities to use them.
Which it did.
True. They did say there was kind of a reason for that.
It's a good reason. The only problem with it is, and I'm not saying that they need to like spawn a scorpion at the beginning of the match. I actually like that mechanic, but they need to bring the scorpion in earlier because most of the games I played, the game would end before a scorpion had come in either. Usually by score.
Yeah. And randomize a little bit.
I only saw the scorpion in two games, I think.
I saw plenty of race. I never saw a scorpion in my games.
Yeah, like I said, of all the games I played, I think I saw two scorpion tanks. I actually got to drive it once, which I do agree with the controls being funky. I got to drive it once, and on fragmentation, honestly, the tank is...
Yeah.
It's a little closed off for a tank. A little better for a Wraith, but it's really closed off for a tank.
Yeah.
It didn't really lend itself to the sight lines a tank would need. It's really easy to get snuck up on, too.
And the terrain, too.
Yeah.
I think.
But
yeah.
I do agree that I like the drop mechanic.
From the Pelican.
I do like that. The one thing I would say is the Pelicans don't drop anything that spawns on the map.
You're talking about like the weapon pods?
No, the Pelicans. Because there was a couple times the Pelicans dropped a warthog. Just a warthog. Which spawns at the back of the base.
Oh, gotcha.
Now, if it...
Well, does the warthog spawn back of the base, or is the Razorback spawn at the back of the base?
No, well, in the flight, it was a warthog.
Okay. All right.
We didn't have access to the Razorback.
Okay. Gotcha.
Now, if they're going to spawn the Razorback in there instead of a warthog for the finished game, fine. I'm just saying that anything that's on a repeating spawn on the map should not be included in either the weapon drops or the vehicle drops.
That includes loot caves. I could tentatively agree to that. It sounds good in theory, and I think that works.
Because, I mean, if it's something that already spawns on the map, what's the point of the drop?
Right, yeah. That's a good point. Have a fleet of warthogs just driving around. Four warthogs carrying the entire team. Which did happen a couple of
times.
Yeah, I feel like it did a couple of times where it was just like two or three warthogs.
Yeah. There's one game I played where... we didn't get to our warthog fast enough when it spawned, so the other team stole it. Then they got their warthog, and then, you know, like...
Just a tear.
2 minutes later, one drops in from a Banshee. from a Pelican.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Great timing on that one.
They did talk about the strength of the Ghost, and that it's going to be adjusted. Some players felt that the Ghost was too durable.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that it was in this section, though. It was in a different section that they're talking
about. Yeah, that was in a different section, but I figured since we're talking about vehicles anyway.
Okay, gotcha.
I do agree with that. The Ghost does seem to take a lot of damage before it blows up.
Yeah. I mean, it's all balancing. It'll continue to be that way. And then the last bit of feedback was Jeff Stitzer, please.
Which is coming.
Yep, just not launch.
Post-launch, but coming.
Right. And then Dreadlock in the chat had a question for us. Do y'all think the shape little AI with personality have a huge potential besides just opening doors?
I think they do, provided they can expand the number of lines they have. Don't get me wrong. I like the concept. I like the concept of the AI giving you battlefield information. But
yeah, that part's nice, but it just
the repeating it seems lines like a gimmick. Just I actually prefer that over the Spartan chatter. To me, the Spartan chatter gets kind of old.
Okay.
I mean, you can't make a Spartan, you know, a bot talk like a teammate. They have a set of lines that they say, and it gets old quick.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Some people love it. I know people that they'll actually turn down game sounds to hear the Spartan chatter more. In Halo 5, for about the first month, I left it on because it was informative and I hadn't heard all the lines yet. But after that, it got distracting. Wasn't
as helpful anymore. Yeah. I guess it's kind of nice for battlefield information, but a lot of that's already on screen and it feels kind of gimmicky to me.
Oh, it's so much a gimmick. I won't argue that at all. But the personalities that they gave them kind of helps with that.
It does. It makes them a little bit more.
You know, it's not the announcer. It's not Sarah Palmer just saying, you can still win it.
We're not out of this yet. You can still destroy the enemy core.
You can still destroy the enemy core. No, I can't because I can't get on my base. Anyway. I think as long as they can keep the lines for the AIs relatively fresh, or at least give them a wide range of lines so that you're not constantly mm-hmm. hearing the same thing over and over again. The commentary part, not, you know, the call outs.
Yeah.
I mean, the call outs, yeah, those need to be the same. That's fine. But the fun stuff, you know, like it's not pink, it's lightish red. You know, stuff like that.
Yep.
That part I didn't find, the little AI buddy, I didn't find that it was that annoying. Not like the Spartan chatter got. But granted, I've played this a total of 6 days. In 60 days or 30 days, I might change my mind.
Yep. Time will tell. Sandbox is next. Talking about aiming first. Positive is the increase in default sensitivities was received well. Lots of feedback. Aiming was difficult on both controller and mouse keyboard. Performance impacted aim. Using a scroll wheel to change weapons on the mouse felt inconsistent and can lead to a player accidentally swapping back to an original weapon. And then a note, confusion around red reticle removal in certain instances. So, interesting thing about the red reticle is apparently they have that disabled for PC, as one reason is as an aim bot or a solution to combat.
It's an anti-cheat. Botting.
Yeah, it's an anti-cheat kind of mechanism. And with the precisionness of a mouse, they feel like having red reticle isn't needed. But there are a couple of weapons that they do agree still need the red reticle, like the energy sword to let you know when you're in range of a swing.
Mm-hmm.
And then like the plasma pistol or the pulse carbine where they track an enemy, so making sure that those have an indicator on when the tracking will actually engage. But precision weapons, they're basically saying you should be able to see with the reticle what you're shooting at with mouse and keyboard. So, friend or foe recognition. Positive is the accessibility and customization options continue to be appreciated. Shield state and overshield readability improved since last flight. Some felt there was still room for improvement.
Did seem feedback, a little blotchy.
It was better.
Oh, no, it was definitely better. But
overshield was just a giant white glowing Spartan, though.
Yeah, it could still use some tweaks.
Feedback. Some players felt IFF outlines made it too easy to spot and be spotted from far away. Feedback. Desired for more options remains, including the ability to turn them off completely.
You know, honestly, I think the marking system should have the same range as your motion tracker.
How so?
Or at least close to it. Not exactly, but close to it.
I would disagree with that.
Well, if I'm holding an AR, I don't want to be able to see the enemy team on the other side of the map.
What do you mean?
I mean, that identification, the foe identification, needs to have a limit to the range.
Oh, you're talking about that. I you mentioned marking.
Well, sorry, I misspoke.
Okay.
But as far as...
No, if I see someone across the map and I want to mark them, I should be able to mark them.
No, that's fine. I mean the actual identification as to a foe.
The
highlight around them, things like that.
Yeah.
And I almost think that there should be some kind of limit to the friend marking as well.
Well, the friends you always have the label over their head, right?
No. You get the outline, but that you don't get the label.
In past games, you've had the ability to basically have an arrow over all your allies, regardless of where they were, even if they were through a wall. So why not just keep that for friendlies? And then maybe have that outline be arranged, like you were saying.
Like I said, I'm just kind of...
That's kind of what you're getting at, right?
I'm split on it. I mean, it could go either way.
I do like the concept of having a limited range on when that IFF outline kind of comes into view.
Mm-hmm. Because it just seems, I don't know, it seems to kind of clutter the screen.
Yeah. A lot of the overlays and graph, like, it's hard because you would almost think in some way that it's helpful, but in the game where you want to experience that, maybe it wouldn't be quite as helpful if you really want to get the aesthetics of the game, but also, that's a hard balance.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an easy.
Like I said, I'm not either way. It's just
right.
I don't know how you would fix it.
Feels off, but you don't know how.
It just seems, especially in big team, the screen just seems to be cluttered with all this other information that I really don't need.
Right.
I mean, especially if I'm in a party or, I've got a group of 12 people, they're constantly talking, telling me where they are. So I don't really need a visual representation other than, a red X if they die or some type of indicator on their name that shows me that they're fighting. But the whole outline thing, I don't need that. Especially if they're driving me in a Warthog. I don't need the outline around them.
That line,
I know where they are. I know they're a friend.
That's if you're in a party with them. Like, if there's people that you're not in a party with.
Like I said, I don't know where to stand on that.
Gotcha.
Honestly, and I don't even remember, for the friend tag, I would almost like to have the option to just turn that off. The highlight.
Oh, that'd be a nice little feature.
So if I'm in a lobby with friends that I'm communicating with, I can turn that off and remove information from my HUD that is not
superfluous.
Needed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
But yeah, we'll see what we get.
On the weapons side of things, positives were overall weapon balance continues to feel great. Throwing fusion coils, aka the noob cube, is a fantastic addition to the gameplay loop.
Mm-hmm.
Feedback, many players expressed concern that the plasma pistol underperformed in most situations.
It does.
Some players were worried about Bloom on the commando and sidekick. And some players disliked the sniper level of accuracy when out of scope.
That I kind of agree with, as far as what 343 did as opposed to the community. I understand that everybody wants to pull off no scopes. I want to pull off no scopes.
Mm-hmm.
It rarely happens for me. So even with the current snipers. So, but I've always thought that snipers should be a weapon that you need to use the scope with. Just by the simple design of the weapon. I mean, snipers are... I've never felt the snipers should be able to fill that up close and personal role.
It was interesting.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I just say that it always seemed like the whole no scope mechanic was just not fitting for the weapon.
Well, so interesting that 343 mentions that the tuning that they have on the sniper rifles is in line with previous Halo titles, and that it's pretty much anything in the circle part of the sniper scope, like the circle right outside the dot. Apparently, like that is in line with how they've had that aim assist
be done in previous Halo games. I think it's the other changes they've made to the weapon. You know, how it's more cumbersome to use.
The nose scoping aspect of it, or just...
No, just the physical movement of the sniper. It just feels more sluggish than it has in previous titles.
I agree with that.
So, the flick shot is not quite as easy to pull off as it was before.
Sure.
Bloom on the initial shot. I mean, bloom affecting the initial shot. I don't know if I agree with that or not. Subsequent shot, or the second shot, third shot, fourth shot. Yes, I can understand that. But the initial shot, I don't know.
Well, there shouldn't be any bloom on the initial shot.
There is. If you fire the infinite sniper on your first shot, bloom is in effect. It does not, if you shoot unscoped, the bullet does not go where the center of the reticle is. It'll drift from side to side, up and down.
Okay, that...
I've seen, I think Mint Blitz did about a...
Hipfire specifically?
Yeah.
I see arguments for both sides, I guess. Yeah,
I'm the same way. Because
for one, hipfire, it makes sense that it would not be dead center accurate. But then again, in past Halo games, it seems like pretty much it has been dead center accurate if it wasn't auto-aiming to something else.
But I think in previous games, it's more the auto, like, you know, on consoles at least, it's more the auto-aim helping you out.
Right.
Especially in Reach, where you got god-tier auto-aim with a sniper rifle while you're riding passenger in a vehicle.
Yes.
Which I was never able to take advantage of. I don't know why.
I couldn't either.
As hard as I try, I couldn't hit crap in a vehicle with a sniper rifle.
Yeah, I couldn't either.
But anyway.
Wasn't for me to...
I really don't know where I truly stand on that one. Because, I mean, they both got good points.
Yep. Moving on to movement. Positive overall movement speed feels and continues to be received well. Desired for increased physics impulses to help with grenade jumping, etc. And split feedback. Some players liked no collision. Other players would like to see it return. This is going to be an unending debate, I feel like.
At least it's not the other debate that we will not mention.
That should probably be on the bingo card, by the way, Pins.
I can see why people want the collision back, because, I mean, you can pull off some neat stuff with, you know, if you can actually touch another player.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there have been so many times teammates have walked into my shot or bumped me or whatever.
Well, there's, like, you also have the funny moments where you accidentally kill your teammate instead of the other guy, or you kill another guy through your teammate, so...
I know, I mean, like, but it's so frustrating! I mean, especially when you've been tracking the guy for the last 5 seconds to line up the perfect shot, and your buddy walks over and knocks you, and you're like, really?
I get some of the reasoning behind it, but it still just I don't know what to fully think about that one. That's a tough one. That's hard. That's a hard one.
I've got a good myth though. So you know they did the myth on how many Spartans a sniper rifle can kill with one shot, right?
In different iterations of the game, yeah. Yes.
Okay, now we get to do it. How many Spartans can we get standing in one spot and kill them with one sniper bullet?
Oh. That's a good one. That's actually a really good one.
Or rocket launcher.
Think about
or,
it. Right, because how does that damage get absorbed? Was it just a global damage applied? Because there's got to be some amount of... That is weird.
How many players can you get standing in one spot before the game engine goes...
I'm wondering if they've even tested something like that where how would the game engine react?
Can you imagine if you get a whole 12-person team walking across the map perfectly in sync?
Yeah, that'd be crazy. It would never happen, but you could get pretty close.
Or say riding on the back of a warthog. Everybody standing on a warthog. like right where the turret is. Yeah, everybody just kind of stands right there. And then you have a driver and one gunner.
No, it'd be funny if everyone was standing in a spot and it's just you look at one player, everyone shoots a BR, insta-dead.
Yeah.
It's like this one guy shot me with one BR and I'm instantly dead. No, that was actually 12 people standing and stacked. You could just be a sentry turret at your base and just play defense the whole time. Whenever someone sees one, it's like, okay, fire this person. Fire. That would be
Think of the screenshots. Stuff. You have 12 guns sticking out of one player.
That would be so weird. Oh, someone's going to try that at something.
Oh, you know what's going to happen.
And yet, yes, Bobby, I know about the whole hiding in the loot cave part.
Yeah.
But I think this is kind of next level. Wow, that would be... Oh, that just hurts my head to think about it. Yeah, Mythbusters, get on that. I don't know if any of them listen to us, but that'd be a good one to try. On the equipment side of things, positives. Grapple Shot continues to be a fan favorite. Repulsor versatility received lots of praise during both weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Feedback, players wanted drop wall to deploy faster and be more durable. Yeah.
I would say either or, not both.
I think it needs to be a little more durable. Not a lot, at least a little more. Because I feel like it's still way too easy to get through one of those squares and then just mow down. Deploy faster, definitely agree with.
Well, the way I see most people using that drop shield or drop wall, whatever you call it, it's a panic drop. oh shit, I'm getting shot.
Well, and that's why I think it needs to deploy faster, because at that point,
you're just burning drop walls. That's why I agree with deploy faster or be stronger. If it deploys faster, it buys you that it helps cancel out that first shot because that gives you time. If it deploys faster, it gives you time to get a shot on your enemy and that brings you to a more equal footing.
Honestly, not a lot of time. No, that's why it doesn't buy a lot of time.
It all depends on how long it takes to deploy that shield. But if you can deploy it fast enough, the shield absorbs that second burst while you're in, while you're in the animation, so that you get a benefit instead of a drawback. If you're in the animation of deploying it, yeah, they can shoot you. But if it can deploy fast enough to absorb that to where you can get a shot off and I don't know if making it stronger will make it overpowered.
I feel like it's still very easy for attackers going against a drop wall to take out a square and to even overcome the person that put the drop wall down. I think it's still too easy.
Yeah, but a lot of that's due to the time that it takes to deploy the shield. Because they're already hitting it while it's deploying, depleting one of the squares. Or two of the squares, or three of the squares.
No, because it's only... hitting the squares once it's actually up. It's not like the bubble shield where once it's deployed, it's more true to actually only blocking it when it's up. There have been plenty of times where I've thrown a drop wall down, I've gotten demolished, someone else has thrown a drop wall down, I've demolished them. It takes more time to put the drop wall out.
Exactly.
And you don't really have a lot of chance to get...
So if they decrease the amount of time it takes to deploy it, you have more of a chance of actually taking advantage of it.
No. You have less time to take advantage of it.
If you do less
animation
to deploy it, that gives you more time to bring the weapon up to fire. I'm talking about making the animation of deploying it shorter.
This feedback isn't talking about the animation, though. This is talking about
the deployment of the shield, which includes the animation.
Oh, I'm...
See, the deployment is from the time you push the button till the time it's active.
Yeah, but not all that's tied to the animation.
No, but a significant chunk of it is.
Okay. I think they're probably... Well, I thought they were talking more about the actual like time of when...
As soon as the shield hits the ground, it pops up. I mean,
it's a good half second. It's still
shorter than the time it takes to throw it.
True.
So the only real way you can speed up the deployment of the drop shield is to reduce the amount of time it takes to get through the animation or change the animation in a way that it takes less time.
Fair point.
I mean, we are talking about Spartans that can basically catch bullets, so.
Fair enough.
I mean, having them throw something a little faster is probably not, you know, game-breaking as far as lore. But anyway, it's a balancing act, and there'll be changes made.
Yeah. Vehicles. Vehicles felt fun to use overall. Location-specific damage, both in art and functionality, was an appreciated addition. Mm-hmm. Ghost felt too strong in terms of damage output and in vehicle health, which you touched on a little bit earlier. Banshee did not feel effective enough, with concerns around Banshee bomb damage output, ineffectiveness of aerial maneuvers, and total vehicle health.
I only got the Banshee once, so I have no opinion.
I only jacked it once, and that was it. And promptly killed. Scorpion's driving was too difficult and unintuitive. Seems to line up with what you said earlier. Last one, UX UI. Positive. HUD's clean and streamlined approach was appreciated. Feedback. Inability to see second grenade type in HUD left some disappointed. Some would like the HUD customization options. And then a couple notes. The flow to mute a player takes more steps than previous Halos, causing more confusion. And due to lack of in-game messaging, players didn't know why they were banned or for how long, causing frustration. They did say they are implementing an update to the HUD that will show both grenade types. That's all the stuff from the tech preview number 2 outcomes. For those who want to get a little bit more specifics on the reasonings and a little bit more narrative explanation, the article is up on Waypoint for you to go check out if you so choose. And I believe that's all the news that we have for this week.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it.
Yep. We are less than a week away from Halo Infinite launching.
Less than a week?
Sorry, less than a month.
I was going to say, do you have some information? I don't.
Nope, I'm pretty sure. I don't.
We're about a month away.
Yep. A month away, 27 days until Halo Infinite launches. Dust gets Halo
fact wrong. Oh.
No, I just misspoke. It's not blatantly wrong. And I will not be here. Hopefully, early media copy will at least allow me to play the campaign, so at least I have some amount of knowledge of what's going on by the time I get back and I'm not so far behind. We'll see if that happens.
Like I said, bring your laptop along and then you...
I don't have a laptop.
Oh, I thought you replaced your laptop. I guess you didn't.
No, I never did. Well, I replaced it with a cheap MacBook.
Yeah, that's not a replacement. That's a substitution.
Case in point. I am thinking about bringing my Xbox just because we are wanting to possibly watch Harry Potter while we're there. Actually, it might be smart to bring the Apple TV.
It'd definitely be lighter. Because
that can't do video. No, well, like we have Harry Potter ripped and like we couldn't really stream it to that. Xbox might just be the way to go. I have a Xbox One S. So that's small enough to transport in luggage. So I will probably still bring that. I have a games case pins. That would count as a whole carry-on, which I'm not going to fill up a whole carry-on's worth just with my Xbox.
Well, you can stuff some other stuff in there. Like your toothbrush and razor. shaving cream.
I mean, it's not much more to fit in there, like, after said, all the power adapters stuff. And controller. Yeah, not worth it. Not worth it.
I'd say throw it in a backpack and carry it on the plane with you.
It'll either be in the backpack or it'll be in checked luggage where it's nice and packed around other clothes that will not make it go bouncy across everywhere.
Yeah, I'd bring it with me.
I have done that before, so we will see what I decide to end up doing. I have put it in a backpack before.
I'm sorry. I'm very distrusting of people. I can't see.
Which is
now, if it was in a Pelican case that had a big ass padlock on it, I'd be okay.
You can't have padlock going through TSA. They cut those open. So yeah,
I'll open it up. Let them look in it. But it's locked before it leaves.
No, TSA will break those locks after it goes through.
You can ask for a manual inspection of your luggage.
Oh, okay. But they still have the right to break it later. Just saying.
Well, there's on the other end, there's all they do is put it on a belt to bring it back up. They only inspect it when it goes on the plane, not when it comes off.
No, right. But even if you still get the manual inspection, like before, they can go and break the lock if they feel like they need to later. Anyways,
I don't care if security breaks it, just as long as the guy carrying my bag doesn't.
Sure.
Needless to say, I've had some things disappear while traveling.
I haven't had that happen to me, so. I've had it where TSA will open up a bag and everything is now completely in a mess in my bag.
Of course, granted, the last time I traveled, TSA wasn't as aggressive as they are now.
Not as intimate.
Well, yeah, you could actually get on a plane with a whole quart bottle of shampoo.
Yeah, not anymore. It's weird how some of that and well, US is only one of the only countries that does that too, if I understand that right.
Well, considering what sparked that, I can understand. And I can put up with most of it.
Yeah, a lot of it's not too inconvenient. Anyways, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. We have the tournament happening this weekend, so make sure you check on the Podtacular Twitch stream at 12 noon Eastern Time on Saturday. We have our Fragment Friday, which will be taking place tomorrow, hosted by GT. So if you want to come and play, hop on over, give us a holler tomorrow on Friday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Check the Discord for the poll. And also check us out again on Sunday, where we will tentatively be doing Season 8 challenges in MCC, if not looking over at Halo 360 achievements that need to be closed out before January of next year. You can find the podcast on many different social media websites. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We also have our podcasting platforms that we have our podcast on, including iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Podcasts, Facebook now as well. If there's a place that you listen to the podcast that we are not on, please reach out to us and let us know so we can get the podcast where you would like to listen to it. We also have our Discord channel, our Discord server that you can check out, podtacularDom.com/Discord. That's where a lot of the community hangs out these days. You can also check us out on our Xbox Club. And don't worry about the Spartan Company now, because those are all locked in place. So for those that are in the Spartan Company and want to continue trying to grind for that Achilles helmet, we'll continue to try to keep going as little as we can until we
get that. Of course, we have no idea where we are now. So,
yep, I just know we have 6 accommodations left. We were within 20 of the latest one, which was the last shot Sayonara and Fastball, I think, medals. I thought we would have had that one possibly done by this weekend, but I didn't see a accommodation pack, so I'm guessing we did not get those yet. Till we have maybe another way to check up on those, we will not be covering Spartan Company stuff anymore for Podtacular. So, yeah. There are multiple ways to support the stream if you choose to do so. You can subscribe to us on Twitch. You can become a Patreon over on a patron over on Patreon. And thanks to Confal, Prestige, and Pins being loyal patrons over there. And if you so choose, you can donate to us via PayPal going to podtackler.com/donate. Again, everything that we're doing for the tournament is made possible because of all the support that we've gotten through those channels. So for those that have contributed in any way or form, for those in the past, we appreciate all the support that you guys have given us to enable us to do this week. Because without all that support, we wouldn't be hosting our very first tournament. So this is very exciting for us. That's going to close it out. Any final thoughts, GT?
Everybody have a wonderful weekend, and I look forward to seeing you on every Friday, especially this one.
Yeah.
And next one. And the one after that.
And for those who have served, thank you very much for your service. It is Veterans Day here in the United States, so I wanted to give a warm thanks to those who have been in the military and who have served our country. So thank you for everything that you've done. And until then, keep on fragging them trucks.